Let There Be Light. From Flashbangs and Frag Grenades. By Calchexis. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on League of Legends by Riot Games. Chapter 24. Happy Progress Day. Where other nations and cultures often mark the end of the Mark Aurea, the year's hottest season, with agricultural festivals as they enter the harvest season, the city of Piltover celebrates something wholly unique. Stemming from the remembrance of the day the Sun Gates first opened, and by extension the day that the Great Fissure was torn in the Undercity, which would later secede as Zaun was created, and from all of the great and golden prophets which followed. Despite the explosive and ruinous event that heralded it, the Sun Gates and the mining colonies that would eventually sprawl out from them were seen as a work of unimaginable ingenuity and progress. For the first time in history, mortal kind had taken Runeterra's crust into their hands and united two seas and two halves of the world. The silks, spices, and artworks of distant Ionia were no longer gated behind Noxian ports. The mercenaries and strange mashes of culture from chaotic Bilgewater could ply their trade between both the Guardian and the Conqueror's seas simply by passing through two sets of gates. Piltover became the critical artery connecting millions of people for two centuries, and that was before the Hex Gates had turned the City of Progress into the beating heart of trade on Runeterra. That was why Piltover had no harvest festival. That was why Piltover had Progress Day. Hundreds of booted feet beat a metronome against the metal floors of the Sun Gate. Every level, from the heights that overlooked the sea to the east and Zaun to the west, down to the lowest levels that dove past the toxic gray, saw double and even triple patrols from the newly instated brass cadres. It wasn't Tal'Jan's favorite day he'd ever worked in the control booth, but all in all, it could have been worse. Piltover, after all, was currently experiencing its most disappointing progress day in a century at least. Tens of thousands were without running water. Plague was barely being kept at bay by the city's doctors and those funny Damasian Cairo Watsits, and the backup sewers were still a problem for 7 houses out of 10, not counting the so-called great houses. If those houses were so great, they could stand to let the people use their privy once in a while, at least in Tal's opinion. As it was, he wasn't nearly as miffed about having to work on Progress Day this year, since at least the control booth had a working shithouse.
"Brenner, where you at with those visa processes?" Tal shouted as he leaned back from his console and cast his gaze around for his fellow controller, and a squeaky curse came from somewhere in the back.
Control Room 12 was situated in a brass, trench-side blister by the North Chasm wall, and so was habitually cold as the Void's asshole. So despite the relatively temperate air outside, he and Brynna were bundled up to the point that Tal's scarf was tangling with his mustache, and only Brynna Pulsalt's mousy brown eyes could be seen over where her button nose was bundled under a scarf of her own. Her thick hair was barely held down under a woolen cap, with little curls poking out here and there. Brynna trundled out, clutching a bulky folder to her chest, and dropped down into the seat beside Tal before depositing the folder onto the console between them.
"Here we go," she muttered. "Not nearly as many as last year, at least."
"Last year, Piltover wasn't buried under half a ton of shite,"
Tal said wryly as he pulled half of the visas over and began matching them to the incoming ship logs and manifests.
"The Council said the sewer system would be renovated and operational weeks ago,"
Brynna whined.
"I can't go back to my flat anymore, Tal. I just can't. It smells like my incontinent granny used to before she went."
"Spax, that's foul,"
Tal scoffed, then asked,
"Didn't you follow the instructions, pouring water down the pipes to clear 'em?" "My flat's too close to the border,"
Brynna sighed as she continued to tick boxes on a piece of paper before jamming the associated visa into the console reader and letting it punch the appropriate access code.
"It just keeps backing up from everyone else flushing."
Tal grimaced as he did the same. He was no man of great means, but poor Brynna had grown up shit poor. He'd seen her home a few times, and she damn near lived in Zaun. You could smell the blasted place. She had told him once that she'd hoped to move her parents out of the slums and into Piltover proper with her job at the Sun Gate. It was much better than anything her mother or father could get. Except her mother had passed from some sickness or other 4, or was it 5 years back, and her dad hadn't lasted much longer.
died of a broken heart, was how Brynner had said it, and Tal was old and wise enough not to ask for any more details past that. The girl kept working, though. She kept her nose to the grindstone, and she was decent at it. Not great, but decent. Tal quite liked her, in fact. Shame that she'd probably never rise above controller, but then neither would he. Wasn't such a bad job, either. Maybe they'd get moved to one of the seaside blisters one day and at least have a nice view. Right then and there, Tal resolved not to accept any transfer offer unless it included Brynna. She wasn't the fastest or the neatest controller, but he trusted her to do the job, and that's a damn sight more than he could say for some of the folks in the gate. The access door to Brynna's left chimed, then slid open, and two cadres crowded into what little space the control blister offered, and Tal froze while Brynna squeaked and shuffled back away from them. He'd never actually seen them up close. When they'd first announced the formation of the cadre, Tal had imagined they'd be something like the enforcers had always been in their shiny brass and blues. They were nothing like that. The cadre reminded Tal of the Noxians more than anything Pilt. When he'd been younger and the world had been a bit less maudlin, he'd watched a Noxian legion do battle drills on the plains outside of Piltover. They'd looked resplendent in their red, silver, and black armor, but they'd moved like machines made to kill and conquer. The cadre moved a bit like that, too, with violence in their limbs, and the brass-edged, matte-black armor they wore with their full face-concealing filter masks and swept-back helms didn't help matters.
"Can we help you, sirs, or,
Mum?" Tal asked, standing up on shaky legs. The voice that answered him had the vague hiss and click of something mechanical, and Tal wasn't wholly certain it was the fault of the filter.
"For the next 6 hours, all visa processing is to halt," the cadreman growled. "Any and all passage through the Sun Gate is hereby banned until that time by council order."
Tal blanched.
No visas? He shook his head in disbelief. "It's progress day. A sad one, I'll admit, but it's still progress day. There's thousands incoming and, well..."
The barrel of a Tystall 45 was suddenly the whole of what Tal could see. And it cut his words off neatly as the cadreman said over him,
"No visas."
"Yes, sir,"
Brynna squeaked from around and behind Tal.
"But what are we to do with this lot we just got?"
She held up the pile they were working on.
"They've already been submitted and half-processed, and the runners are waiting in the vestibules between out and in."
The gun lowered and Tal sagged back as the cadreman turned to regard Brynna with something between contempt and dispassion as he said,
"No visas means no passage. Hold them until the time stamp passes."
"For 6 hours?
Tal asked, goggling at the cadre.
"Do you have any idea how cold it is in those vestibules? It makes this blister feel downright cozy, and there are important folks on those ships."
Tal cursed himself as he realized he'd backtalked the cadre again, and he saw the twitch of the man's carbine. Before it could be shoved in his face again, though, Brynna stumbled between them and said,
"Sure things are. But let the folks know we're locked down by cadre and council order. Sort of the questions, and we'll get right on it. Quick as you like."
There was a moment of thin, broiling violence rising from the armed and armored, faceless man, and then it passed like a summer storm as he gave a silent nod, then turned on his heel, and the rest of his crew did the same with eerie clockwork efficiency. As they turned, Tal made a mental note of the mark on their shoulder plates. 105. The door clicked shut, and Brynna immediately collapsed to her knees and let out a wordless sob while Tal slumped back into his chair. The cadre really was nothing like the enforcers. The enforcers could be bullies sometimes, sure, but anyone could be. Those weren't bullies. Those were killers. He was certain of that much. Those were bloody killers.
"What's happening to this city?"
Tom mumbled as he swiveled around to stare at the pile of now useless visas and processing papers. Brynna crawled back into her own seat across from Tal and huddled in on herself, staring blankly ahead. There wasn't anything more to do since they wouldn't be processing anything. Silence reigned between them for several minutes before Brynna finally broke it, saying,
"I wasn't supposed to be like this."
"Hmm?"
Tal looked up at Brynna, whose face was pressed against the thinly padded and insulated knees of her skirt.
"This. Brenner repeated. Piltover was supposed to be better. But Grandad and Granny left the undersea before it was ever zone. And I did it to make a life. They worked at the bone into death for my dad. And Ian Mum did the same thing for me. But it's worse than ever.
Tal sighed and nodded. It wasn't fair. He didn't hold much with trenchies, but Brenna was one of the good ones. She wasn't even a trenchy, never had been. She'd been born in the slums, but she was Piltofen for all that. She'd done it right. Her parents and her grandparents had done it right. And now, they were swimming in shit while being stuck up by their own military. A military that the council had once sworn the city would never form nor need.
Yeah, but it'll get better, Tal said quietly. You'll see.
He reached over to pat her shoulder. Just keep your head down and do as you're told, and things will get better.
What if they don't?
Brenna looked over at him with red-rimmed eyes.
I will make them better, then.
Even if we have to fight for it, Tal said firmly. Strangely, Brenna snorted, then started to laugh bitterly as she wiped at her eyes and said,
That's funny.
What is? Tal asked with a frown.
Just, well, that's what the Zonites are doing, isn't it?
Brenna looked up at him with eyes that seemed somehow darker now.
Fighting to make things better.
That's well out of line, Bryn, Tal said sharply. Brenna shook her head, then sighed, then turned and was on him with a speed that took Tal completely off guard. He wasn't a fit man, and had been on the wrong side of middle age, but Bryn was practically waifish. Nevertheless, she had him down in a trice, and any shout for aid was choked off by the press of a cold, jagged blade to the hollow of his throat.
Sorry, Tal, she said quietly. I really do like you, so...
She jerked him up and dragged him towards the shitter.
I'm going to need you to stay quiet, okay?
Tal couldn't exactly disagree with a piece of steel against his windpipe that Brenna pressed harder against until he had retreated back and pinned himself fully against the toilet. Only then did she let up a little of the pressure, and Tal hissed out,
Traitor!
Brynna's expression was hollow and angry.
Piltover has killed my whole family, she said through her teeth. We did everything right, but Piltover killed us all the same. So who betrayed who first, huh?
She moved hard and fast, and stars burst in Tal's vision as she cracked the butt of her dagger between his eyes, and he crumpled back. Then the door closed, and he heard something click and grind. Tal-Jan rose and threw himself against the door again and again, rattling and jarring it, but nothing could get it loose. He pressed his back to the wall for leverage and kicked at it over and over, shouting the whole time until finally he felt something give as his feet were aching almost unbearably. Almost there, he was almost there. He kicked again and again and again until the door's seal cracked and it jarred loose from the fittings, and Tal threw his shoulder against it, barreled out of the room, and... Zap! Tal-Jan dropped to the floor, twitching and stinking of scorched wool, and Brenna sighed in despair before walking over and crouching beside him to check his pulse. She found it weak and thready, but it was there, and she let out another sigh, this one of relief. Tal had always been good to her, so she hadn't wanted to hurt him. She'd hoped he would give up, but of course he didn't. He always was too stubborn for his own good.
He's still alive, she mumbled.
Then looked up at the figure in the controller's chair who had drawn, aimed, and fired her gun without ever lifting her head from the console.
Thank you for not killing him, Camlord.
Jinx turned her head enough that Brenna caught sight of one bright, shimmer-pink eye, and flashed that weird, stretched, rictus grin of hers.
Guess the thick coat must have soaked some of Zapper's zap up, she said with a laugh. Lucky him!
Brenna's stomach clenched. Then she swallowed thickly before walking over to Tal's console and sitting down, then asking,
What next?
Next?
Jinx grinned at her.
Next? We're gonna crack open some gates.
7 hours earlier. A cold wind blew over the sun gate, sweeping the top layer off of the gray and dispersing it. Lux pulled her brown spell thief's leathers closer around herself as wisps of chemical cloud cover were peeled away in layers. She dangled her legs off of the edge of the outcropping pipe that opened out of the chasm wall as, behind her, the footsteps and voices of Zonite warriors, she wasn't sure she could call them soldiers yet, echoed past her in a familiar way. It had been a long time since she'd been in a war camp. Today was the day, and it had barely begun. The light that filtered up over the horizon was a dull, matte gray. But even in that wan illumination, she could see the approaching waves of aerial and sea vehicles. Despite the ruin that Jinx had wreaked on Piltover by effectively destroying the topside sewer system, the annual celebration was still going forward. It was an almost Demacian approach to things, a very stiff upper lip manner of action that dutifully ignored reality in favor of propriety. Then again, the people of Piltover probably took comfort in the idea that not everything was going against them. Not yet, anyway.
Happy Progress Day, Blondie!
Jinx dropped down beside Lux, her long overcoat flapping in the high winds, and Lux smiled back at her.
Happy Progress Day, Jinx, Lux said.
She reached out and took Jinx's hand in hers. The diamond ring of her focus lay heavy between their palms as she twined her fingers with those of her wife before asking,
Is everything ready?
More or less,
Jinx replied with a shrug.
What was Renata's opinion?
Jinx screwed up her face and replied in her best raspy impression of the older woman as she said,
Acceptable.
Lux snorted at a laugh. If Renata Glask thought that their preparations were acceptable, then that was as good as gold. Renata reminded Lux of her late aunt, albeit in a good way. Like Tiana, Renata wasn't one to mince words or waste breath on compliments. So if she actually did compliment something, then that means it truly was outstanding. All told, the speed at which Zaun had rallied itself for war was absolutely outstanding. While Zaun possessed no shortage of killers, they lacked unity, discipline, and purpose. The Piltovans, for all their flaws, were much better at working together, and that knack was redoubled with the help of Demacia's dauntless veterans. One thing was bothering Lux, though.
I don't like the idea of you going ahead alone, she said.
No one else can do it, Blondie, Jinx said, squeezing Lux's hand. Gotta be me. Someone else will get it wrong.
I know, Lux replied. But that doesn't mean I have to like it.
Counting on you to take him the rest of the way, Blondie, Jinx said. I'll hold the door open.
How chivalrous,
Lux said, her lip curling slightly as she leaned over to rest her head against Jinx's shoulder, and Jinx tipped her head to rest it against Lux's. War. Today was a day for war. For so long, the League of Legends had held back the threat of true war. Noxus had at times flouted that decree, but never enough to earn censure. Demacia had done the same. The Freljord, of course, had its own internecine feuds and skirmishes between clans, with which the League oathed not to interfere with. Bilgewater had fought a half dozen minor civil wars within itself, too, but that was to be expected. Through it all, the true purpose of the League had remained intact. A purpose that she and Jinx had inadvertently neutered when they had convinced Zaun to withdraw from the League's signatories. That purpose, to protect the arms scaling that might lead to another rune war, was withering away in a kind of slow death. Lux imagined the League would be gone within a decade, its champions and summoners dispersed amongst their respective nations, with perhaps some remaining to maintain the seals on the most terrible creatures bound by the League's magic, the demon Fiddlesticks and the void beast Cho'gath. It would become a glorified pen for monsters while the world burned around it.
You know, Jinx started,
I don't think Dad ever really wanted to start a war.
How do you mean?
Lux asked as she watched dawn slowly encroach.
I mean, the more I think about it, the more I think it was supposed to be more like a threat, she replied. Like a bomb that nobody wanted to set off.
Mutually assured destruction.
Lux finally looked up at Jinx, whose springberry eyes were fixed on some distant point at the horizon.
Yeah,
she said.
Maybe.
Well, the thing about threats,
Lux said as she settled her head comfortably back on Jinx's bony shoulder, is that for them to have weight, you have to mean them. She felt Jinx nod, then turn and press a kiss to the top of her head, and Lux smiled a little wider as Jinx slipped an arm around her waist. She didn't need to ask to know that they were thinking the same thing. Lux knew it from how Jinx's hand settled gently over her abdomen. By the end of the day,
they would have taken the first true step toward the start and the end of the war. And that meant they would have taken the first true step toward their daughter. One step closer.
Hey, Blondie.
Yeah?
Do you think I'll be a good dad?
Lux made a thoughtful hum as she nestled closer to Jinx. There was a fragility in her voice that wasn't often audible, but that Lux knew was always lurking beneath the surface. Jinx had buried all of her pain and vulnerability beneath her madness. It wasn't a veneer either. She had, maybe even consciously, gone mad for the sake of becoming the person she had wanted to be. It was still there, though. All that madness, fear, anxiety, and fragile, glassy hope was still there. Gripping Jinx's hand, Lux said,
"When I was very young, my mother and father sold me into slavery to the Radiant. They saw my magic and chained it to the throne of Demacia, and they told me it was for my sake. They surrendered me without a fight. They didn't even try to save me from the horrors the Radiant would put me through under the umbrella of training." She sat up straight, reached out, and laid a hand on Jinx's cheek to turn her face until they were eye to eye. "My mother was able to hold me in her arms, and she still let me go. You can't even touch our daughter's hand yet, and you're going to war for her, so yes," Lux said with a small smile, "I think you'll be a wonderful dad."
That more genuine rictus grin broke across Jinx's face, the one that lost the neutrality of her usual stretched expression and showed true delight as she pulled Lux close and nuzzled their noses together before pecking a kiss onto Lux's lips.
"Thanks, Blondie," she said as she pulled back. "You're the best. And you're perfect," Lux said softly as she traced her knuckles over Jinx's cheek.
The tender moment was broken by a violent twitch that set up in the muscles around Jinx's left eye, and she jerked back, clapping a hand over it as she let out a wounded animal groan. Lux muffled a curse as she reached into her vest and drew out the pieces to the injector, clicked them together, and slipped the now nearly empty vial of shimmer into the chamber.
"Jinx, breathe,"
Lux said as she shuffled closer and pulled Jinx's hand away from an eye that was now bright, gemstone blue, and set the injector brace around the orbit.
"Deep breath, baby."
Obediently, Jinx sucked in a breath just as Lux hit the plunger and the needle jabbed like a stinger. Jinx spasmed and rocked back as her breathing turned ragged and drawn, her fingers curled into arthritic claws while her jaw clenched with a tight, cracking noise that Lux didn't want to think too hard about. It was getting worse. When it had started, she needed a dose every other week. Then every week, then the decline became sharper, and now they were almost out of shimmer due to Jinx needing a shot every other day at least. It was Janna. Lux was certain of that. Jinx might have kicked Janna out, but a goddess doesn't give up easily. She still had her hooks in Jinx, still wanted Jinx as her vessel, and all the shimmer in Jinx's body was probably the only thing keeping her out.
"She can't have you,"
Lux said as she pulled away the injector and took Jinx's face in her hands.
"Do you hear me? She can't have you. You're mine."
"Yours,"
Jinx echoed numbly as she laid her hands over Lux's.
"In every single dream."
"We'll fix this," Lux promised.
Jinx nodded, then gave a brittle laugh as she pulled herself back to her feet and Lux followed her.
"Yeah, but first we gotta fix that."
She gestured out towards the sun gate.
"And today's the day we're doing it."
"But we will fix this,"
Lux repeated, taking Jinx's hand and squeezing it. "No one else is allowed to touch you, ever." Jinx smiled that rictus grin back at her before darting in for another kiss. It was probably supposed to be quick, but Lux caught her by the back of the neck before she could pull back and dragged Jinx closer, sealing her mouth over Jinx's and pressing herself flush to the taller, leaner woman as their tongues tangled. And Jinx's long, thin fingers wove up and through Lux's hair. When Lux finally drew back, it was with Jinx's lower lip between her teeth and the taste of blood on her tongue that she held for a moment before letting go.
"I don't care how many gods or aspects I have to kill," Lux whispered. "No one touches you but me." Jinx licked her lips and smiled wider as she whispered their Gutlau promise, their own private, I love you.
I love you too, Lux whispered back.
A quiet clearing of her throat behind them broke up the moment, and Lux turned to glower at the Glasgari wardsman, who took a step back, knocked his knuckles against his chest plate, and said,
The right of you, Kemnord, Lady Light.
Jinx huffed. Time to go to work, she said as she peeled away from Lux, who allowed it only grudgingly.
They made their way towards the mass of people gathered in the depths of the pipeworks, stepped up onto a raised bunch of boxes that made an impromptu stage. This was the first group out of several, and the one that would be leading directly. To Jinx's side was Victor, his mask up and his staff at the ready as he looked up at his Kemlord, then gestured with his staff. Immediately, a little swarm of Hextech drones rose up around Jinx, spilling out fields of light around her as they connected to the other drones in a dozen different sections of pipe all over the city around the Sungate. Grinning, Jinx threw her arms wide, sending her father's coat flapping in the cold morning winds, and roared,
Happy Progress Day!
Miles away on the other side of the chasm, Seraphine could only smile at the upswell of fierce hope that rose from the people around her, even as she leaned into Renata's embrace while Jinx worked up the crowd. Victor's drones projected Jinx's face to an even larger gathering of Zonite soldiers waiting to receive their orders, and met the Kemlord's bellowed greeting with a ragged cheer.
All right, numbnuts, here's the deal,
Jinx snarled out in Gutlau.
Today is the day we take the Sungate right out from under the Pilti's stupid noses. We're not going to do it quiet, either. We're going to go in and drown those cadre assholes in their own blood and wash them right out of Zaun.
Another cheer answered that declaration, and Seraphine could hear it echo on Jinx's side. As much as she had wanted the cities to find a peaceful solution, it had become increasingly clear that Piltover had never intended to bargain in good faith or to give so much as an inch to the Zaunite people. She hated that it had come down to blood, but it had. And Seraphine was proud to stand with her people.
All of you have got leaders, right?
Said Jinx flatly, now crossing her arms. Then she raised an eyebrow, leaned off to the side, and muttered,
They have leaders, right, Blondie?
Yes, dear.
Neat.
Jinx's face reappeared in the projection.
Anyway, those leaders have got maps. Those maps are going to take you to the right place. Trust me, I made it myself.
Which normally would have been cause for concern, Seraphine reflected, but Jinx had more than proven herself, and the cheers that rose up from the soldiers around her supported that.
Now, the big problem isn't getting to the Sungate anymore, because the maps have that handled. The big problem is getting into the Sungate, and that's where I come in. I'm going to get my hands on the Sungate's controls just long enough to pop open the seals and let you all in, but it's going to happen real quick, and it ain't going to last long.
A general murmur rose among the soldiers, and it must have happened on Jinx's side, too, because she made a sharp, slashing motion with her hand, cutting off the back talk.
And if you're wondering,
she continued, some of her humor now fled,
yeah, that means that once we're in, the doors close behind us. That means we've got one way out, taking the primary control chamber of the Sungate and killing or throwing out every single Pilti in the whole damn place.
It was a bold plan. One might call it insane.
You've all got your bosses, and you've all got your maps. Once we're inside, the plan is simple.
She raised her mechanical arm up and ratcheted out the Hextech shotgun within.
Kill anything that moves that ain't one of us.
That got a brutal cheer that was more of a bloodthirsty roar than anything. It was the baying of hounds at the start of a hunt, and Seraphine grimaced at the sheer bloodlust that spilled out from it. And it kept on coming until she couldn't take it anymore, turned, and buried her face against Renata's side.
I hate that it's come to this, Seraphine said.
I'm aware, kitten, but there's something to be said for the simplicity of this plan,
Renata said dryly.
Shock and awe, I think, is what the Noxians call it.
So many of us will die.
Seraphine peeked out from where she'd pressed up against Renata's jacket and looked over the cheering Zaunites as Jinx continued to expand on the plan.
So many of them won't come home.
Renata stroked Seraphine's hair gently as she said,
They would die eventually anyway, and they would probably be killed by a Piltover too, either directly or otherwise. At least this way they can die fighting back.
Anyway, that's all from me,
Jinx said, crossing her arms and nodding toward the crowd.
We're going to beat the Pilties the Zaunite way. So listen to your bosses, watch your backs, and stay out of my firing line. Toodles!
Seraphine laughed as Jinx waved excitedly before vanishing, then gratefully took Renata's arm and followed her as she walked them both up to the crude stage that had been used as Jinx's projection platform. Behind them both, another drone drifted. This one was larger and more menacing, and carried armor glass canisters of deadly chemicals concocted in Glasgari chem foundries, according to Varanza's recipes. Victor had crafted it for her by hand for this very battle. And when it was finished, Renata had actually smiled before naming it the Decanter. All around them were a mixture of Glasgari wardsmen, Grime Ward throng, and Erasmus mercs. It was a motley collection if there ever was one. All of them knew Glask by both sight and sound, though. She was one of the most powerful figures in Zaun. She had wealth, cruelty, and cunning in spades. And in Zaun, rising to the top meant killing a lot of people on your way up, and that earned respect. Seraphine herself had no such respect, but the people liked her for a different reason, or so she told herself. Turning to face the thousand-plus-strong mass of soldiers, Renata Glask raised a hand for silence, and the dull murmur of conversation died out as she started speaking.
"Today, we are not Glasgari,"
she began in a sonorous gutlow that was probably helped along by some subtle mechanics in her filtration mask.
"Today we are not Grime, nor Erasmus, nor Vix, Hush, or Merc."
Seraphine laid a hand over Glask's where it rested on her own and smiled as the mass of soldiers began standing visibly straighter under Renata's attention.
"For too long we have allowed Piltover to keep their heel to our throat, and all because we were many pieces broken by centuries of bondage. For too long we have allowed them to keep us broken, to keep us disparate, but no more!"
Her voice rattled the metal walls of the pipes, and it was answered by the bellow of the soldiers before her, and even Seraphine's heart quickened in her chest, despite having heard this same speech practiced again and again prior by its orator. As Renata was so fond of saying, it really was different in context.
"Today we are not the broken wards of the Undercity."
Renata raised her chemtech fist.
"Today we are one! Today we are Zaun!"
With the answering roar of the soldiers, Renata turned and descended, gesturing sharply forward.
"To war!"
The sound of over 1,000 feet shook the pipes as they fell in behind the two of them and Renata's floating decanter. And as they all settled into a comfortable tempo, Seraphine licked her lips, took a deep breath, and raised her voice in Gutlau's song. "I was born in Mother's streets, where the loyal drums did beat, and the loving Pilty feet, they walked all over us." Behind her, the soldiers took up the next verse, and so, to Seraphine's shock, did Renata.
"And every single night, when the Pa would come home tight, he'd invite the neighbors out with this chorus."
Smiling wider than she ever had, she harmonized her voice with Renata's deep, husky rasp and with all the soldiers around them.
"Come out, you brass and blues, come and take me one on two. Show me your white face when the stripes down in the chasms. Show how the mother's sons had you turning tail to run from the green and toxic lanes of Oshravazon."
The text of this story is available on AO3. Music by Dot Matrix. If you would like me to record a story, voice over a character, get in touch using the contact information available on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as a link to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.